This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Margaret Taylor. Jane Bolton.
John Ward.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Margaret, you came to New Zealand some time ago, did you?
Yes, I did. I was working in Canberra at the time. I worked at that time for Whitlam.
Gough Whitlam.
Gough Whitlam.
Okay.
Yes.
Doing what?
He was the Prime Minister.
Yeah. So when was this?
This was in the... I'd been working in Ballarat before then. But in 72, I went to Canberra. Mm-hmm. And because at that time there were really no staff, you know, it was the new idea, it was the new gallery was going to be built. And Gough Whitlam was the most inspiring man. And mm-hmm. he organised with James Mollison, who had been also one of the directors at Ballarat before me. Mm-hmm. To go there as the future director of Canberra.
The National Gallery.
As opposed to at the time, there were five galleries, one in each state, if you remember. Victoria had one, in New South Wales, and so on. So it was a very strange time because there's quite a lot of jealousy around. Yeah. You know, among the states, for suddenly a national gallery, and they could see sort of, you know, funds being dribbled away from them.
So were they taking the works of art from the state gallery?
No, they did nothing of that at all, I think, because James Mollison became a great friend of Whitlam, and so did I. It meant that... Whitlam had a great regard for what James had in his mind as a sort of a major collection. And so he allowed him enormous freedom.
And a large budget?
Yeah. In the way of acquiring works for Canberra. Okay. And of course there was no gallery. There was a piece of land. And so it was the beginning of collecting together... a whole group of architects, and to get their ideas on a new gallery building.
Now we probably have to go back a bit. You're not Australian.
No, I'm not. I'm from Yorkshire.
Where in Yorkshire?
I had a Scottish father and a Yorkshire mother.
Oh,
and I was brought up in Yorkshire.
Dales or in the city in Yorkshire? Or?
Well, we were in several places, but I suppose the main one for me was Halifax. And then just outside Halifax, there was a village that we had, which was called Luddendon Foot. Mm-hmm. But from there, we went down to Somerset and to Dorset eventually.
And so what led you to move around like that?
So we went from Yorkshire to Somerset, really, that sort of change.
There's a culture clash there, isn't there?
So I suppose I would have been about 15 when we left Yorkshire. Mm-hmm. So I had some time in school in Somerset. But that was the most extraordinary change for living for us. Yes. Because Somerset was almost medieval. Compared to Yorkshire.
Really?
Yorkshire was full of humour and
I grew up in Yorkshire and I did work in Somerset for a while, but the cultural difference was quite amazing.
But did you find enormous differences?
Oh, massive.
I mean, for us, it was just after the war, you see. So, yeah. I mean, we had had... The differences were just enormous.
Yes, it's the north of England compared to the south, and there's a big difference there.
Absolutely, Now, I remember that, you know, wartime in England was an enormous number of deck chairs in our cellars when all the neighbours would come in, we'd have the most enormous parties under the house. We were.
That was your bomb shelter, was it?
I was four when the war started. You know, at that stage, you don't have any fear or anything like that. And so my brother and I were put under a table in the cellar, but all the deck chairs were around us, and the chatter that went on was enormous.
Okay, so why did your father move around then, or your family move around? What was he doing?
Well, I think this was always the way with people in the church. He was a vicar. So Halifax, we were concerned with, very much involved in what was called Halifax Parish Church, which had, I think, about seven clergy. It's really where Daddy started in the church, because he'd been an orphan in Scotland, and he'd been brought up in Glasgow, but he became, through study and so on, he became a naval architect. So he was designing boats and ships and submarines and things like that.
And the connection to the Ark led him into the city.
And it's absolutely extraordinary how things work out.
Yeah.
And then eventually he came down to study the sort of the church, to go into the church, and he ended up as a curate in Halifax. I suppose he'd be in his early 30s, and Mummy would have been in her early 20s, and she had trained as a reference librarian. Yeah. She had this passion for books. But together they were absolutely marvellous.
So you had a really serendipitous journey to be running the National Art Gallery in Canberra.
I know, it's extraordinary, isn't it? Well, anyway,
I suppose eventually,
after finishing school and getting, you know, my qualifications from school, I also won a scholarship to a place called Bath Academy, which was a place which had been bombed in the war and was now situated in something called Corsham Court. And Corsham was a marvellous new art school based on the Bauhaus. Now, the Bauhaus is, you know, the sort of German schooling that you have, where you take an enormous amount of work in the landscape. You know, you take a tremendous amount of found material and so on. Bauhaus was an immense art.
What, you mean movement. You're doing things with driftwood and plants?
Everything. And you see, Corsham Court belonged to this marvellous man called Lord Methuen, who was an artist too. Now, he had no money, but he had this enormous, I don't know how many acres, but you know, it was in the thousands. And he had this, he loved the idea of the art school being in his house and in his buildings. So the art school, which was a four-year course, and there were about a dozen in each year, so about 40 to 50 of us, I suppose.
So was it in
scattered.
Bath or Dorset?
Oh, no, this is in outside Bath, at a place called Corsham. Corsham is about 10 miles from Bath. It's a sort of medieval village in a way. Really quite lovely, but away, you know, and this marvellous house. I can show you photographs.
So your training was in all sorts of art, different types, in
this Bath Academy in Corsham. So I had 4 years there, which was devastating. Because it was just after the war, the Bauhaus and the people who set it up wanted something which was totally different to other art schools, because it was the only live-in art school in England. and they wanted, there were so many artists who had come back from the war, and of course had no money, you know, they were all struggling to get this.
Yes,
and so we had this wonderful collection of artists who came and taught at Corsham, had their own cottages and studios in the village. And they're all famous artists. So
was there much of a market for artwork in Britain just after the war then?
Not really. Not for a time.
Yeah.
Because things have been so bombed. I mean, London was shattered. And I suppose every road, and it took a long time. And also, the grants, I suppose, that England got from America had all to be paid back. You cannot imagine how England survived.
Yeah.
We had rationing till 1958. It is extraordinary to think about it.
Unbelievable, yeah.
But for us, as an art school, it was devastating. Because Bath originally had been the home of Sickert and so on. And all these major, major artists of the future were people who were teaching us. And so we got to know them terribly well because of these very small classes.
Yeah.
You know, we knew them incredibly well.
So are the names that people might recognise?
Oh, yes, there would. There would. I'll certainly show you all the material too.
Okay.
But major, major people.
Okay.
So
you were doing, was it mainly painting,
sketching?
It
was painting,
sculpture,
printmaking. Everything, really.
Textile,
everything that
you have textile
required into your hands.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And eventually you got what was then the National Diploma of Design, which was a four-year... it was equivalent to a degree under... And it came under the umbrella of Bristol University because that was the closest university.
So for design, so the idea was training you so you could design furniture, artworks, clothes?
Yes, and you also were writing. I mean, we were doing an awful lot of art history. We had marvellous art history lecturers and writers who would come and spend time there. So it was an incredibly rich time. I think probably because it began in the morning at 8 and finished at 10 at night, it was solid, solid, marvellous work.
How many students were there?
Well, there'd been about 50 of us over
in
the 4 years.
You were boarded in the big
Yes,
house.
We boarded in the village.
In the village?
Yes, in the village.
Right.
Which was only 2 minutes from,
yes.
You know, if you... I can show you a photograph, actually. It'll be easier.
Yeah.
But it'll show you that the Corsham Court and the church were really a very short distance away from the village street. So 5 minutes
how
we could be in.
How do you spell Corsham?
Corshan.
Okay, yep.
But I'll show you all those things.
That's right.
So, okay. And did that lead on to you going into London? You went
yes,
into London.
Did. Yes,
to
and after that I did my a basic thing on art teaching to get an extra qualification.
Wow, I had no idea.
So I had 6 years altogether.
And where in London were you teaching?
Most of it was theory, but a little bit in the East End, which was marvellous.
A bit, incredible.
Now, with your study, what was the sort of gender breakdown of the students?
It would have been about... mostly half and half, but a very big student male student population.
And what would they have gone on to do?
The
they
same thing.
Gone into
art
teaching.
Most of us
or?
Went on to art teaching schools. So this meant that really you were back with your major passion.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Teaching students.
So what, is this because there was a big shortage of art teachers in those days? Or?
No, it was no more than usual.
No one was motivated, say, to go into design or you couldn't make a career in
I think it was probably, there was a great interest in the way that we have been taught teaching because of the Bauhaus. It really was bringing something very new into England, which depended upon absolute working with original material.
Okay.
It was very much a searching out, and so that students, in fact, they didn't require money to go and get material to work with.
That's brilliant.
Went and walked in the fields.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was the beginning of their weaving experiences and all sorts of things.
That's
like
so
that.
Important.
Terribly important. And it meant that money was not the, didn't stop you doing anything.
Now, with a New Zealand context, you'd think something like that would be drawing on traditional crafts and so on. Were you doing much of that?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, we'd certainly learned all there was about weaving and lithography, but we also did much of our lithography on stone, which was... It was agony to leave at holiday time, really.
And a lot of it was hands-on, sort of, the studio time.
All hands-on. And I suppose each night, at least 2 hours of it would be life drawing.
Okay.
Which we love passionately.
Yeah.
And we even, of course, being in a park, we could have the nude bear among the trees and things in the summer.
Fantastic. It was
idyllic before.
Brilliant.
Absolutely astonishing.
And how was all this funded then? Were you on grants?
It was funded through, mine was a scholarship from Somerset.
Okay.
And I think because of the war, it must have been the Somerset County, I think, that subsidised the art school, quite honestly.
Okay.
It might have been Somerset or Wiltshire, the two mixed, they're very close together. But it didn't. I think the wonder was that they were able to use all the artists who were suddenly out of... they had to establish their reputation again.
That was brilliant for them.
And they were just superb. So it was a very exciting time. But we did all our own bronze casting and things like that. Which normally you'd never get a hope of doing.
So you would have been in this very rich artistic environment.
Yes.
And you went to Australia.
Shortly after that. Shortly after that.
So you went up to London, you taught in London for 6 years.
In London for 2 years, I suppose.
Sorry.
I'm trying to think of how I'm mixing all my things. When I left Corsham, I also, I went to London for my first year there, and there I met someone I became engaged to, called Ted Capper. And dear Ted was the nicest person, but he was on his way, he was wanting to do marine engineering, I think it was, and this he was very much encouraged by my father, but he had the most appalling mother, who was a snob of the most outrageous English kind. I can't tell you.
Highest degree.
And for her, Ted, to get involved with a blooming vicar's daughter, of all things, who by that time was qualified and could have afforded to send him, you know, to work out something so that he could go to and spend his time in Scotland and get his degree and so on. So she decided that that was not on. So she thought the best thing for him would be to go to India as a tea planter. You see, that was the sort of sufficiently high-class situation to put Ted into. So eventually, I mean, she won out and Ted went to India.
And you
we
didn't
wrote
think
backwards
of following
and forwards,
him to
but
India
eventually
or?
That it just couldn't work. She was appalling. Anyway, so that sort of stopped my first moving out of England, for instance. But then came, I suppose Daddy was contemplating retiring, you see, at that point, in about 62, I suppose it would have been, 61, 62. And that's when it all happened with Lord Fisher coming to the vicarage, the old rectory in Carrick, Trent. I'm getting my vicarages mixed up now. It was a heavenly old rectory. It was built in 1420. So it had arched windows and a marvellous arched cellar and stained glass and
Was being a vicar's daughter an asset or a constraint to you in your teenage years?
Oh, it was marvellous. Never a constraint, because Daddy had enormous humour. So, I mean, although we would be going to church on Sundays, you know, but he would always make us take our library books. And as we always had the back pew, you know,
oh, I love it.
You see, he was quite gorgeous. He was never a constraint. It was never a constraint.
So, and how about the children your own age in the various parishes? Given your role, you were sort of a leader of the youth group or something?
No, he never wanted me to feel any way obliged to do anything. And of course, you know, from the time of being at Corsham, of course, I was away all the time. But even before that at school, they really... And I suppose as a family, we always had these enormous old rectories. So I was encouraged in my very wicked love of collecting to always have all the attics. And there usually were three or four attics, you see. And I would fill them with stuff.
Did you have brothers and sisters? Or?
I had one brother, but he was 6 years older.
Okay.
So in a way, we were quite separate in a funny sort of way. You know, he was... But we all had the passion for books, every member. So that meant weekly visits to a library since I was in a pram. You know, I would have a pram full of books. And then, of course, at all the parish fairs, I'd always get in charge of the bookshop. You know, so my collections were vast for pennies and halfpennies. So I think my earliest sort of times in, you know, with the village or in the church or whatever were incredibly happy get-togethers, and Yorkshire, of course, had enormous humour. So they adored making up and having dramas and so on, you know. So I was always in the background of, you know, making them up. And
brilliant.
So it was all incredibly creative. So,
now, often someone who feels so there's so much richness in their own environment, for them to then move to the other side of the world, what motivated that? Did you have an urge
then,
to travel?
You see, there is a funny thing also that if you have been among parishes, when you move to a new place, you suddenly have 200-300 people very quickly.
Mm.
You never feel alone, ever.
Yeah.
So it didn't feel like going to a strange place, or just going to another parish.
Yes. On the other side of the world.
Yes, it happened to be.
It has been.
3 weeks away by sea, but you've never thought of it as being as far away as
it was. You didn't think
you
were leaving a lot behind, or there was the same sort of things to be
of interest? In a funny sort of way. I think because we'd had the bishop in Tasmania had been over in England, and he'd come and seen Daddy and begged him not to retire but come to Tasmania because they were terribly short of clergy. And Daddy, an island, seemed rather fun. So, it was in the
air.
So
it was a family move.
It was in the air, do you see? So, and then when my brother heard about it, he said, but I've always wanted to go to Australia. So without, in minutes, he had made up his mind to go first.
And you'd be late 20s by then, would you?
I would be about 25, 26 when I left England.
Yeah. What was your brother doing? What did he do?
He'd been in the army, he'd been in the Gloucesters, so he'd been part of the things in Aden and Kenya and all of that period then. Oh. But he'd come out of it and he was working with an international firm, I suppose it would be an advertising publicity firm, that sort of thing. And so they had offices all over the world, and then they immediately got in touch with him from Melbourne, said you've got to come. So he was, having been moved around in the army, he was quite happy to move around again.
Yes,
so it was all rather crazy.
So it all happened.
So he went first, and the bishop had been and talked to Daddy about this. And then, of course, Lord Fisher, when he heard the possibility that Daddy was going away, came to see if he could possibly live in our rectory. So, this is how we got to
So then
to
you were
him.
Homeless and you had to move.
I know. He was just lovely.
Did he inherit all your books in the attic?
Oh, yes.
still there.
He had a bad knee, and he would come. They would be there all the time, actually. They came all the time. And he had six sons.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And they all would come, and they were going to Australia, It all linked up. And he eventually came and stayed with us and in our rat-ridden rectory that we had in Tasmania instead of this medieval palace. But it was a fascinating period.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.